This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
WHO Regional Emergency Director for Africa, Ibrahim Sosfal, says the spread of the disease is faster because pneumonic plague, which is transmitted from person to person, has moved from the remote rural areas to congested urban areas.
That's Elisa Schlein reporting on the plague outbreak in Madagascar. Details coming up. Also, President Uhuru Kenyatta marked today Heroes Day in Kenya by calling on all to respect the individual rights provided by the Constitution. Thousands of anguished Somalis have gathered today to pray at the site of the country's deadliest attack and to mourn the hundreds of victims. And Kizza Besigye, leader of the Ugandan Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, was arrested and charged with murder today. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story today is Heroes Day in Kenya. President Uhuru Kenyatta marked the holiday, honoring the nation's founders with a speech calling on all to respect the individual rights provided by the Constitution, including the right to participate in an election or not to. Next week, Kenya holds a rerun of national elections. The Supreme Court invalidated the results of the August polls. My colleague Vincent Macori is in Kenya, and he reports people are nervous about what lies ahead.
It's not possible to tell for sure whether there will be an election. And if there will be an election, many people are wondering, what shape will they take? And whatever results that come out of those elections, will they be credible? Will they be acceptable? And if not, then what next?
The news today that the Elections Board Chief Ezra Chiloba is taking a leave of absence adds to the uncertainty. Opposition leader Raila Odinga has demanded that Chiloba and other election officials resign before he will take part in the vote. As Vincent Macori points out, with less than a week before the vote, Chiloba's departure raises new questions.
Stepping aside at this time, how does it really benefit the process? It's just a few days to election. Will this satisfy the opposition to participate in the election? Will this inspire confidence in the electoral bodies?
Vincent says the weekend should be fairly quiet in Kenya, with no major political events planned. A week of talks in Cameroon's two English-speaking zones wrapped up today. The government organized a dialogue in a bid to end a push for independence in the regions. However, the talks have appeared to have made little headway. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Hundreds of protesters in Lebialem, an area in the English-speaking southwest region, jeered and chased away delegates sent by President Paul Biya to hold talks Tuesday with local leaders. The protesters set ablaze the residence of Bernard Fojo, a lawmaker from the locality. The protesters then sang this song they called the anthem of their newly created state of Ambazonia and left, promising never to listen to Biya's emissaries. One of those emissaries, Senator Mbela Moki, said the government will not give up.
You should be propagators of national unity, the relevance of living together, living in peace, and contributing in national development in this beautiful country of ours. That is the message. As we promise, we shall be back to ensure that the call that we made has had a very positive response.
The Prime Minister travelled to the northwest, his native region, for talks in different towns this week. There hasn't been any violence reported. However, many delegates have refused to meet with him. A government crackdown on leaders of a year-long strike in the two regions, as well as the emergence of Anglophone separatist groups, have escalated tensions. On September 1st, President Paul Biya released 55 people detained over the strike. However, as many as 100 others remain in jail. On October 1st, tens of thousands of people marched in the southwest and northwest to support independence. Security forces killed at least 17 people, according to Amnesty International. Not all English speakers support independence, and Emmanuel Anyambot, senior pastor of the Presbyterian Church in Cameroon, says some groups may listen to Biya's delegates if the remaining detainees are released.
They went to prison because of a common cause that they were facing. Some have been released, other ones have never released. Release these people, let us dialogue, or you try them and pass a verdict instead of keeping them there.
Separatist groups have said they are ready for talks, but only with President Biya on the terms of their separation. The president has said he will engage in no talks that threaten national unity. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The World Health Organization reports pneumonic plague is continuing to spread at an alarming rate in urban areas of Madagascar, and greater effort is needed to bring this deadly disease under control. Latest figures put the number of suspected cases at 1,153, including 94 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Health agencies are worried at how quickly this disease is spreading so early in Madagascar's plague season, which runs from September to April. The disease usually infects some 400 people a year, but this year, with six more months to go, the number of suspected cases is nearly three times higher than normal. WHO Regional Emergency Director for Africa, Ibrahima Sosfal, says the spread of the disease is faster because pneumonic plague, which is transmitted from person to person, has moved from the remote rural areas to congested urban areas. It is mainly found in the capital, Antananarivo, and the port city of Toamasina. Nevertheless, Fal tells VOA he is confident WHO, in coordination with the Ministry of Health and other agencies, will be able to contain the disease in short order. He says WHO has provided enough antibiotics to treat 5,000 patients and to protect up to 100,000 people who may have been in contact with an infected person.
This can be controlled relatively quickly if we manage to improve the contact tracing, as we are doing right now, so with the teams who are already used to contact tracing and putting all contact under antibiotic prophylaxis, we can prevent the disease. I'm confident that with the strong team we have on ground, combined with more partners coming on, with the community health workers, we'll be able to revert very quickly the trend.
Fall cautions, though, it will be important to remain vigilant after transmission is over. He notes stopping the transmission of the plague does not mean the risk is gone. He says the virus is still in the country, and while people continue living in poor, unsanitary conditions, the disease is likely to recur. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Kisa Besigye, leader of the Ugandan Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, FDC, was arrested and charged with murder today. According to Reuters, the arrest follows a deadly anti-government rally on Wednesday that security personnel broke up with tear gas and bullets. Two people died in the rally. Government opponents were denouncing a legislative plan to extend the rule of Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni. Ugandan police spokesman Dennis Nama Aduzo said Mr. Besigye and other FDC officials led the youth who pelted police officers with stones. He said their actions caused death. President Museveni, 73, is barred from running again by the Constitution, which caps the age of a presidential candidate at 75. The next elections are due in 2021. In power for more than three decades, Mr. Museveni is backing proposed legislation to remove that age ceiling. Fifteen past the hour, you were listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. In the Gambia, President Adama Barrow is coming under increasing criticism for accepting a gift from undisclosed donors. The president recently received a fleet of vehicles from one of his supporters, which he in turn donated to the country's parliamentarians. Now, there's controversy over President Barrow's move to give the vehicles to the IMPs without disclosing the source of his philanthropic gesture. English to Africa's Pandera Mbai reports.
President Adama Barrow's recent move to donate 57 vehicles to members of the legislative branch, the National Assembly, has raised eyebrows in some quarters across the country. The source of the president's gift remains unknown. Questions have been raised about the legality of the president's action, given the fact that the legislature and the executive branch of government should operate independently of each other, according to the Constitution. Some watchdogs interpret it as a way of influencing the parliament or at worst corrupting them. Hence, four MPs representing the opposition People's Democratic Organization and Socialism PDOIS party in the National Assembly have not accepted Mr. Barrow's gift, citing the issue of lack of transparency about the source of the donation. Mrs. Amibojan Sisoho is President Adama Barrow's press secretary.
If there are National Assembly members who do not want to take the vehicles, that is beyond our capacity to talk about it here. But what I know is that the vehicles where I've been informed came from philanthropists who have been there before.
The failure to disclose the source of President Barrow's gift to Parliament by the press secretary has sparked a heated debate. Swaibu Ture is a Gambian parliamentarian.
As a National Assembly member, one is to scrutinize the government, is to put a check on the executive.
Mr. Ture said they are yet to be told about the source of the vehicles and under what conditions they have been allocated to his colleagues by the president. Opponents and defenders of the president's actions both cite the Constitution. Those who oppose his move point to Section 222, which prohibits the president from soliciting or accepting gifts. He can only receive them under limited circumstances from family members. Failure to turn over gifts to the office of the president would violate the constitutional course of conduct. On the other hand, Tourism Minister Hamad Ba defended the president's gesture to the parliamentarians.
The president wants to respect Section 112 of the Constitution, which talks about upholding the dignity and respect of the National Assembly, making sure that members of the National Assembly are giving their dues in accordance with law.
Dr. Lamin Conte is a professor of accounting based in the United States. He disagrees with Tourism Minister Ba. He said Mr. Barrow is not the government of the Gambia, and therefore such donations will only raise doubts in the minds of Gambians.
This is very, very, very sad, but the simple fact is that we got folks who line up to just donate stuff to the Gambian government. And in my field of accounting, we call it direct financial interest.
Political and human rights activist Pa Samba Joe says it is not the president's business to subsidize the legislative branch with any form of financial or material assistance.
The government should be able to be honest with the Gambian people and tell them the source of all their funding and expenditures. So to tell us that these cars were given by Barrow or because they came from a philanthropist who wants to remain anonymous, to me, undermines everything that Barrow is calling for.
Lately, the Barrow government has been engulfed in allegations of conflict of interest. News reports say the government is planning to issue a no-bid contract or a contract with no formal tender to Chinese companies to construct the multi-million dollar Banjul Port expansion project. Port officials have sought legal advice from the Justice Ministry over the issue. The Justice Ministry said the contract should be subjected to open and international bidding. In the meantime, the finance minister, Amadou Sani, has applied for a loan of over $177 million from Exim Bank China to finance the port expansion project. If the president has been found guilty in either case, the controversy of port contracts or gifts, he could be removed according to the Gambian constitution on the following grounds: abuse of office, willful violation of his oath of allegiance, or for conduct which brings the office of the president into contempt or disrepute. This is Pandiri Mbai for VOA Africa.
Thousands of anguished Somalis have gathered today to pray at the site of the country's deadliest attack and to mourn the hundreds of victims. According to the Associated Press, a sheikh leading the prayers said that this pain will last for years. More than 300 people were killed and nearly 400 wounded in Saturday's truck bombing, with scores missing. AP reports long lines of mourners standing in front of the bombed-out buildings. Somalia's government has blamed the Al-Shabaab extremist group for the attack. Meanwhile, AP reports the U.S. military is saying it carried out a drone strike this week against Al-Shabaab in Somalia shortly after the extremist group was blamed for the country's deadliest attack. The U.S. Africa Command says the strike occurred Monday about 56 kilometers southwest of the capital Mogadishu. The U.S. says it is still assessing the results. And Senegal's presidency has launched a new social media campaign to combat fake news. Sophia Christensen reports from Dakar.
Senegal's presidency is getting into the fact-checking business.
Vous savez, aujourd'hui, il y a une floraison de...
The special advisor to President Macky Sall, Ousmane Thiongane, says fake news is flourishing. It is something people cannot control and that can end up affecting politics, society, and the way people behave. It is a concern being raised around the continent, and around the world for that matter. A recent study of the Kenyan electoral campaign, released in July, found that 90% of Kenyans had seen or heard false news about the election, much of it shared via Twitter, Facebook, and WhatsApp. Thiongane recalls how the Senegalese government had to intervene earlier this year amid panic over false rumors about plastic rice imported from China. Senegalese authorities publicly tested rice imports and broadcast interviews with scientists to dispel the myth that had spread in several African countries via social media. The presidency launched its new initiative on October 12th, inviting social media users to flag questionable posts regarding the presidency using its youth-oriented social media account Génération Sénégal and the hashtag StopFakeNews. The initiative's first and only post went up the same day, seeking to debunk criticism of Senegal's healthcare system, though the post did not specify the source of the claim. Senegal is known to have a relatively vibrant and open media. However, the quality of information online can be uneven. One reporter for a popular local news outlet told VOA, there are tons of news sites in Senegal, and many only exist to take advantage of press subsidies. It would be good to regulate all this, as long as both the media and government respect each other. In Senegal, diffusing false information, defamation, and insulting the head of states are all criminal offences punishable by jail time and fines. The presidency's new initiative has some rights groups wary. Fatou Jain Senghor is a West Africa regional director for Article 19, which defends freedom of expression and information. She says tracking social media can be intimidating to the public and a waste of government time. She says it will create self-censorship and it can lead to abuses if it is not well managed, because certain people and social groups will be targeted. Senegal is one of several African countries, including Zimbabwe, Cameroon, and Uganda, that have used existing laws to detain or prosecute individuals over social media posts in the past 2 years. In August, Senegalese singer Amy Kolediang was charged with offending the head of state and broadcasting fake news over a WhatsApp recording in which she allegedly refers to President Macky Sall as a lizard and a sai-sai, a term in Wolof that could be translated as a scoundrel. She was released on bail. Deng's case followed the detention of a local journalist and three friends for sharing a satirical photo montage of President Sall on WhatsApp in May. The four were charged for diffusing immoral images and released on bail. The presidency told VOA the government's response to Deng's case was exceptional because she is such a well-known public figure. And the goal of the fake news campaign is to verify information for the public. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Dakar.
Zimbabwe's First Lady could be heading to the vice presidency of the country's ruling party. Sebastian Mumfu reports from Harare.
Until 3 years ago, First Lady Grace Mugabe kept out of Zimbabwe's politics, but then she was elected leader of ZANU-PF's women's wing. After that, she began to attack Joyce Mujuru, who was then vice president, accusing Mujuru of plotting to remove President Robert Mugabe. Grace says, "They say I want to be president. Why not? Am I not Zimbabwean? Oh, it's only you, Mujuru, who is suitable. I asked long back who has more right to be a president than me." That was directed at Mujuru. President Robert Mugabe eventually fired Mujuru and replaced her with Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa. Now it seems Grace Mugabe could be positioned to take over from Mnangagwa. And some political analysts say she might even take over from her husband. She has started public attacks of Mnangagwa, also accusing him of plotting against Zimbabwe's long-serving leader. This week, the ruling ZANU-PF party said it will hold an extraordinary congress in December to endorse President Mugabe's candidates in the 2018 elections and to amend its constitution to ensure that one of the two vice presidents is a woman. Analyst Alexander Rusero is from Harare Polytechnic College School of Journalism, and he says the situation looks similar to the ouster of Mujuru.
Emmerson Mnangagwa is on his way out. His political obituary has already been written by ZANU-PF. That the four of it is the First Lady herself. So what it means is that ZANU-PF, for now, it's a private limited company where Mugabe is CEO and he can do whatever he deems necessary for his survival and longevity in power.
Rusero says the 93-year-old Mugabe considers Mnangagwa a political threat. The Zimbabwe War Veterans Association once supported President Mugabe, but now backs Mnangagwa and wants him take over from Mugabe. Victor Matema Danda is the group's Secretary General.
A dynasty being developed. Someone saying the next ruler must be Mugabe, saying that the First Lady should succeed. But let me assure this country, and even those that are far away from here, that that dream is not going to be realized. That is not going to see the light of the day. It will never happen, because it is morally wrong.
The debate at the Congress could be heated, as Mnangagwa has many supporters in ZANU-PF, creating fears of a party rift. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tanner, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.